It's telethon time. It's September. It's the Bob Enyart Live annual telethon. Can you help keep Bob Enyart on the air for another year? I know you can do it. Every subscription, we're giving away Bob's brand new video on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Have you ever wondered what happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Have you ever wondered why it is that God put that tree in the midst of the garden? I've wondered a lot of things about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Bob's brand new video version of his insightful teaching on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is free for anyone who subscribes to any of our monthly subscriptions. Our newest product, our monthly sermon audios on standard compact disc, allows you to listen to the sermon on any CD player, including the one in your car. You can also get the monthly sermons on MP3 CD, or you can get the video version of the monthly sermons on DVD. Bob's monthly Bible studies are now available on DVD or MP3 CD. These are great for starting your own family Bible study or a neighborhood Bible study. And Bob's monthly topical videos give you a new topical video each month. And with the best of Bob, you can get the best 8 Bob Enyart Live shows every month. Folks, I know you get a lot out of Bob Enyart Live, and it's time to pay a little bit forward. Help keep Bob Enyart Live on the air. Call us up or go to kgov.com, subscribe to one of Bob's monthly teaching series, or just make a donation, $5, $10, $5,000, $10,000. It's the Bob Enyart Telethon. We need your help to keep on the air. God bless you.
One warning is to the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Enyart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart. This has been a great year for young Earth creationists. The journal Nature has published this landmark study. You know how evolutionists have long said that our DNA is about 97% junk? Well, 440 researchers from 30-some labs around the world have published a landmark study in the journal Nature saying that they've now documented that at least 80% of the genome has function. 80%, and one of the lead authors has been interviewed saying he believes it might be 100% functional, and that's been a prediction of creationists for decades, including right here in our debate with Eugenie Scott, famous atheist anti-creationist back in the 90s. You could hear that. Just go to realsciencefriday.com/Eugenie. I dream of Eugenie. Eugenie Scott. And in Singapore this summer, the AGU, that's the American Geophysical Union, one of the world's largest scientific bodies for professional geologists and geophysicists, had a conference, and this conference was in association with the Asia Oceania Geosciences Society, and it was well attended, and a group of scientists presented their data when they carbon dated dinosaurs from across North America. And so to find out more about this, we have one of the authors of this study on the line, Hugh Miller. Hugh, welcome to Real Science Friday.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be on your show.
Well, it's an honor to have you on, Hugh. Now, were you one of the authors who went to Singapore?
Yes, I was. I'm the lead author, mainly because I had to send the material in. There are other qualified co-authors with PhDs in physics, genetics, and mineralogy that are far more knowledgeable than I am about science. But I'm happy to be have a bachelor's degree in chemistry and have taken courses in nuclear physics, radiochemistry, and spectroscopic analysis, which led me to where I am today. And I'm kind of a coordinator for this international group.
Hugh Miller, I don't know if you recall this, but if my memory serves, I had a meal with you in Montana back quite a few years ago.
Yes, I do remember very well, and it was well attended by about 10 or 15 of us.
Glendive, Montana, at the Creation Museum there, the Fossil Museum. And there were some luminaries in our group. For example, the producer and writer of the Hollywood movie Alleged on the Scopes Monkey Trial, Fred Foote, was there. And so was Richard Sternberg, who is the central figure in Ben Stein's movie Alleged. He was there also.
Yes, it was a very good meeting. Hugh Owen was there also from the Colby Center for the Study of Creation.
Yes, so if we could, let's give a brief overview of the Singapore conference and your team's trip and presentation. Then I'd like to talk about a couple other issues, some of the science involved, and then maybe your San Francisco conference from a couple years ago, and then we'll get back to the Singapore trip. So as an overview, what happened in Singapore?
Well, and everything went very, very well. They were very cordial to us and just treated us like everybody else. And they gave us permission to even document Dr. Thomas Seiler's presentation, his oral presentation.
Dr. Seiler is from Germany?
Yes, he's from Stuttgart, Germany. He's a PhD in physics.
A doctor in physics. And his presentation was of 10 dinosaurs excavated from Alaska through North America. And you guys had these carbon dated. In fact, he spoke of you guys using world-class laboratories, five of them around the world, and getting results. And the results showed that even though you're dating dinosaur bones that should be tens of millions of years old and they should have no modern carbon, in fact, they all had significant amounts of carbon-14.
They did, 22,000 to roughly 39,000 radiocarbon years with the sensitivity of the accelerated mass spectrometer that we primarily used is in the range of 50 to 60,000 years. So we're very satisfied that we were following the precise protocol of all five laboratories, including the University of Georgia, which is our primary lab in the last 8 or 9 years, and also University of Arizona, which is the primary laboratory that also keeps extensive records of radiocarbon dating from late 1940s on up to the current time. They published the journal Radiocarbon, which is a very fascinating journal, which they try to keep up with all the changes in the dating methods to make sure that they're doing everything as proper as they can.
Now, I've just concluded a debate with a well-known evolutionist, Aaron Ra, and in the debate, when I mentioned that there's carbon-14 everywhere it's not supposed to be, including in marble, coal, oil, gas, in diamonds of all places, pretty hard to contaminate diamonds, and in dinosaur bones, he quoted Marie Claire, who stated that this carbon-14 that's been found is at the margin, at the threshold of the technology. And so it's expected that we would get this kind of erroneous data at the threshold. What you just stated makes it clear that we're nowhere near the edge of the ability. In fact, they're almost counting individual atoms. That's how good they've gotten in the laboratories.
Yes, it's a very efficient piece of equipment. When I was using spectroscopic analysis, it doesn't come close to what the accelerated mass spectrometer does. As you say, it counts every atom. Now, there is some problems occasionally with the equipment, but we have five laboratories and all excellent equipment, and I can't imagine our dates being in such a lower part of the range of 22,000 to 30,000, 40,000 years would be contaminated by laboratory equipment or by the sensitivity or the, shall we say, the soil that surrounds the dinosaur bones, because they use excellent procedures for removing all contamination. They've had 60 years to do this, to perfect it.
And, Hugh, we're speaking with scientist Hugh Miller, who has been working on carbon-14 dating and dating dinosaur bones for many years. Hugh, this has been thoroughly treated in the peer-reviewed literature. In fact, I've read some of the old papers where they looked at their procedures. They looked at the error rates. They looked at the technology and the industry. This entire segment of radiometric dating concluded that the dates they're getting are valid dates. These are not, of course, occasionally there would be an error in handling and there'd be contamination. And occasionally there would be errors in the equipment. But what they're getting overwhelmingly is actual data of actual carbon-14 atoms in the specimens.
That's correct. And when you have 10 out of 10 skeletons, randomly sampled, register concordant results in the mid-range of their equipment, 20 to 30,000 years or so. What are the odds that the rest of the well-preserved North American dinosaur remains will as well be the same? it's preposterous to think otherwise because the scientists have perfected their technique.
And not only you guys now, you guys believe that the Earth was created recently by God, but at dinosaursofttissue.com, a webpage that we maintain here at Real Science Friday, we show from peer-reviewed scientific journals that when the secular scientists get around to carbon-14 dating their dinosaur and mosasaur bones, they're finding the same thing. They're finding modern carbon, and it's quite a challenge to them because they're showing powerful evidence that the soft tissue is not contamination, that it's actually dinosaur tissue, proteins, collagen, blood vessels, blood cells, hemoglobin. And then when it comes to the carbon-14, they say, well, this must be contamination. But if you're getting contamination, you think it's going to destroy your 65-million-year-old dinosaur tissue. So they're trying to interpret it both ways, and you can't really have it both ways.
No, you can't. They just are in a state of denial. And the survival of soft tissue makes sense if the bones are 30,000 years old, but makes no sense if they are greater than 100,000 or 65 million or 225 million. Just not makes sense whatsoever.
Now, let me explain for my audience, who I'm sure does not get into the nitty-gritty details of potassium argon and uranium and carbon-14 dating and the young Earth creation movement's assessment of all this. These dates are presented as an upper range, an upper limit of how old something might be. For example, carbon-14 has a very rapid half-life. It's short-lived, so that if the entire world was made out of nothing other than carbon-14, the entire Earth, within a million years, it would all decay. You wouldn't have any left. All the carbon-14 would be gone. So when you have a specimen like a bone, or a tooth, or a scale, and you count the carbon-14 atoms within it, if that tooth were, for example, 100,000 years old, there should be no original carbon-14 left. It should all have decomposed. The fact that we're finding a lot of carbon-14 in these dinosaur bones indicates that they're nowhere near 100,000 years old, that they're very young. And then creationists, including those who are attempting to explain the origin of radioactivity on the Earth, then we address the question of, well, why does it look like they're 20 or 30,000 years old? We know they're not a million years old or 60 million, and we have strong answers to explain why it looks like it's 30,000 years old when there's plenty of evidence to indicate that it's actually very young, including the fact that we have blood vessels and blood cells.
Right on. You're absolutely correct. And they actually deleted our abstract from their website.
Let me understand that. So you guys were there as one of a number of teams to present. How many geologists about were at the conference?
There were over 2,000 scientists. A lot of them were oceanographers, and they do study rivers. And a lot of very good chemistry and so forth are discussed at these meetings. Our meeting was a subgroup called the Biogeoscience Group. Mm-hmm. And we submitted, the title of our abstract was A Comparison of Delta 13 Carbon and PMC Values for 10 Cretaceous Jurassic Dinosaur Bones from Texas to Alaska, USA, China, and Europe.
Wow.
So basically, we said in our abstract that the delta 13 carbon range, sorry for the technicality here, but that's what they use is carbon 13, 14, and 12 with the accelerated mass spectrometer. So it was such and such a value, and the collagen was such and such a value. We said to them that this translates to apparent ages of 22,000 in a Psittacosaurus from the Gobi Desert, China, to 39,000 in a Triceratops from Montana. We told them exactly what we got, and it was accepted by the committee.
So your abstract, you guys were not deceptive.
No, not at all.
You applied for permission to present. You delivered your abstract, and your abstract is, in fact, right now on 2,000 CDs that were given to each of the scientists who participated.
Absolutely, but they pulled it off their internet website, and they did not even have the courtesy to notify any of the authors. It seems to be a knee-jerk reaction by a couple complaints that were given to the chairman, and the chairman pulled it off.
Yeah, we're used to this kind of science denial, science doubters, those who fear science, like they fear the study of regions in our DNA that they call junk. They actually discourage it. They don't want people to study the junk, and now lo and behold, the junk is not junk, and the creationists have been correct for decades, saying that you guys are wrong when you say junk DNA is the best evidence for evolution. It's not a good argument because it's not junk. So now Nature, this month, September 2012, has published at least 80% of the human genome is functional.
That's marvelous. I never heard that. Thank you for letting me know about that, Bob. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, Hugh. And it looks like it might be 100%. That's the prediction of one of the lead authors. So we have the same thing with dinosaur soft tissue. There's soft tissue deniers, soft tissue doubters. They don't want to look at it. They don't want to see if it could be confirmed because it seems to contradict their dearly held belief system, their doctrines. The same thing with carbon 14. We offered Jack Horner, who's a world-renowned paleontologist who helped excavate this soft tissue T-Rex, we offered him $23,000 to carbon 14 date that T-Rex, and he turned it down. And these scientists don't want to see results carbon 14 dating of these artifacts.
It's amazing that they have this kind of mental block. I pray for them. I think there's going to be somebody that's going to do unto dinosaur bones what these other scientists have done to the genealogy studies of our DNA, okay?
Yeah. Yes, you're exactly right, because there's something about truth. It's the force of truth. You can fight against it, but it's like trying to put your shoulder to the sun and keep it from rising. It's too difficult. You're going to lose eventually. So you guys also went to San Francisco, right, to that conference?
That's correct. We went there to protest the fact that our abstract didn't even make it through the initial system. And we were protesting to the president of the organization. And God bless him, he came up to our motel suite and saw the data. And he was astounded. He just, this can't be.
Now, wait, you're not saying that the president of the AGU came to your hotel suite?
That's correct. Oh. We went down to try to find him. There was 22,000 people in this conference.
Right, and And the president of the conference, the president of the AGU, he's just not going to take time in that very busy conference to meet with some young Earth creationists who have carbon-14 in their dinosaur bones. He's just not going to do that, right?
No, he wouldn't do that. We were shocked. We were in denial when we saw him.
He wouldn't do it, but he did it.
He did it.
I think you guys have God's favor on you, Hugh.
Yes, I think so, too. God has been with us, and he's guiding us, and his guardian angels are sitting on our shoulders telling us what to do.
Okay, so who was more in shock? Who was more surprised, you guys at seeing him or him at looking at your data?
Well, I recognized him right away from his internet website. My other co-workers, there were three of us there, Bill White, Hugh Owen, and Joe Taylor. And I think we were initially in a great shock, but then when he left, he was in a great shock because he saw the data on our placards, which I'm looking at right now. He couldn't miss them. It had the list of dates. By the way, I did get to meet him in Singapore also. He's walking down the hallway, and I stopped him. I shook his hand and said, oh, good to see you again.
Wow, that's great, Hugh. You went to San Francisco. You met with the president of the AGU.
That's correct.
And so it's in his mind now. Which, this is a battle of minds and hearts, the long war against God, and God is our creator. So it is in his mind that when you carefully date dinosaur bones, you get very young dates. They're not millions of years old. So how about in Singapore, are you guys protesting? Is there any appeal process?
Not that we know of. The chairman apparently have the last word because the president of the organization, Dr. Takashi, I think his name is from University of Tokyo. he would probably listen to his chairman. He doesn't want to offend anybody, so he'll probably let it stand that the abstract will be pulled. However, we're not finished. We're going to write him in the next week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And since it has not been put back on the internet, we will argue with him for reasons why it should, and all the reasons we've talked about today will be in that letter.
Well, if it would help at all, I doubt it would, but if it would help you, we would like to add a letter, sort of an amicus brief, friend of the court letter, saying that as a broadcast outlet in Denver, Colorado, we've interviewed scientists involved with this paper, and we're very discouraged at this kind of scientific censorship.
Now, that is something I haven't thought about. That sounds like it would be a pleasant idea. I would like to have an Amici Curiae by Bob Enyart and the crew there, and he should see your website where you have documented so much useful information that it seems to me that they have to take recognition of what's going on here and that they are not doing good science.
Okay,
and maybe
well,
that'll put it back on the internet. The big idea here is to really make waves so that some of these scientists will finally say, we can't keep on doing this censorship, this counter-scientific, this scientism is what they're doing. It's almost like a philosophy.
Right.
Their philosophy is overriding their science. So we got to convince them to go back to science.
Right. For example, when the secular cosmologists say the universe has no center, now I don't know if it has a center or not, and I'm not a cosmologist, but I do know that some of the world's leading Big Bang proponents have admitted that this is ideology, it's philosophy. They say this is not science, this is our opinion, our philosophy, that the universe has no center, because we'd be very uncomfortable if it turned out that the Milky Way galaxy was at the center of the universe. We wouldn't like that, so we say it doesn't have a center. So their worldview drives what then people think are actual findings of science, when a lot of these things are not findings of science, they're atheistic presuppositions that are presented as though they were conclusions of science.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's very disconcerting to keep running into this kind of philosophical negativism.
Hmm.
And I'm hoping that folks like you and others who are out there, and even the mainstream scientists, are coming around to looking into this whole area of science, and they're just tearing apart the theory of evolution. Just like the mainstream scientists are now coming to do research that is totally relieving the evolutionists of their claims,
yeah,
if I may put it that way.
Yeah.
And evolution is going down the tube.
Yeah, I think it is in a real way. Like the Altenburg 16 conference in Europe recently, with leading evolutionists who are saying, you know what, the Darwinian mechanisms cannot account for all the genetic complexity that we see. That's one example. There's so many. The junk DNA argument has gone the way of the dodo bird and the way of the vestigial organs arguments. Their arguments tend to be very short-lived, and long-term they fall apart. So we're almost out of time, Hugh Miller. Could we talk about one last technical issue?
All right, sir.
Here's what atheists tell me when they look at this carbon-14, for example, in diamonds and in dinosaur bones. They say, well, it must be neutron capture. You must have carbon-13 atoms, and they capture a neutron, like from nearby radioactivity, and that's why you have carbon-14.
We have analyzed the key bone fragments from the hadrosaur and the triceratops. That's hadrosaur number 2 and triceratops number 1 from Montana. And there was less than 20 parts per million of uranium and thorium in those bones. It's just negative. They hardly could analyze for it. It's just barely
right.
Available.
There's,
there was some there, but it has to be upwards to that of the concentration of uranium in uranium ores to create carbon-14 to the tune of about 1 PMC. That's 1% of modern carbon-14. So 1% of modern carbon-14 does exist in uranium ores, where the percent of uranium is 18% or higher.
Right. Of the material that the fossil would be buried in, I've made this argument with atheists now for a couple years, that the USGS published a paper saying that radioactivity in the crust of the Earth, it's relatively rare, even on the continents where 90% of it is, it's relatively rare. So we're not finding all these diamonds and dinosaur bones in uranium mines. Carbon is not the likely element to absorb free neutrons. Carbon doesn't really like to absorb neutrons. Heavier elements absorb neutrons. And so there is powerful physical evidence that this is not the result of neutron capture or contamination.
I'm so glad that you asked that question, because we just finally remembered we better check for the uranium and thorium. And this is because of your remarks about that to me, over the emails or whatever, the last 3 or 4 months. So we went out and we did the analysis at a laboratory in St. Louis.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea, Hugh, that Real Science Friday helped to bulletproof your presentation
in
Singapore.
Oh, yeah. You guys, I love your website. I was familiar with it up until about 3 or 4 months ago.
Well, okay? Thank you. Now, let me clarify for my sake and the audience. You're probably talking about specifically our dinosaursofttissue.com webpage.
Yes, that would be it. Yes.
Okay, because we also have realsciencefriday.com, which our interview will be on that site, realsciencefriday.com, within a few hours from now.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, I'm just thrilled to hear that we were helpful in that way. And we are out of time. But Hugh, here's what I would love to do. You guys are doing some of the original research. Many creationist groups don't do that. CRS does that, Creation Research Society. They do actual research, like Mark Armitage and Kevin Anderson in their current iDino project, where they are photographing cells from a triceratops excavated in Montana just this year, 2012. They do original research there. You guys are doing original research, and the entire creation movement has a debt of gratitude to you guys for doing this.
Well, we hope to get a paper published in a secular journal. It's already being looked at by the assistant editor of one of the journals right now, and we hope that he is friendly to what we're doing, because he is involved in carbon 14 dating. I can't say where he's from.
All right, no, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. Right, exactly. But hey, okay, thank you so much. We're out of time. Hugh Miller, what an honor to have you on the show. And we'll continue to keep the audience up to date on your work. Thank you. And this is Bob Inyart with Real Science Friday. We're looking forward to Fred Williams being back in studio. Check out our store.
It's telethon time. It's September. It's the Bob Inyart Live annual telethon. Can you help keep Bob Inyart on the air for another year? I know you can do it. Every subscription, we're giving away Bob's brand new video on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Have you ever wondered what happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Have you ever wondered why it is that God put that tree in the midst of the garden? I've wondered a lot of things about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Bob's brand new video version of his insightful teaching on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is free for anyone who subscribes to any of our monthly subscriptions. Our newest product, our monthly sermon audios on standard compact disc, allows you to listen to the sermon on any CD player, including the one in your car. You can also get the monthly sermons on MP3 CD, or you can get the video version of the monthly sermons on DVD. Bob's monthly Bible studies are now available on DVD or MP3 CD. These are great for starting your own family Bible study or a neighborhood Bible study. And Bob's monthly topical videos give you a new topical video each month. And with the best of Bob, you can get the best 8 Bob Inyart Live shows every month. Folks, I know you get a lot out of Bob Inyart Live, and it's time to pay a little bit forward. Help keep Bob Inyart Live on the air. Call us up or go to kgov.com, subscribe to one of Bob's monthly teaching series, or just make a donation, $5, $10, $5,000, $10,000. It's the Bob Inyart Telethon. We need your help to keep on the air. God bless you.